Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by the Salty Something Saloon. The Salty Something Saloon, where the root beer is 5 cents, the playing cards have 5 aces, and the customers are missing 50% of their bodies. Turn left at the Inukshuk and keep going until you smell sandwiches.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh Kagan. And we have an exceptionally special guest today. We have author and longtime buddy of Team Kagan, Mr. Manuel Gonzalez. Author and man about town and professor and bon vivant and snappy dresser. If I were to just say off the top of my head a couple things about Manuel Gonzalez, I would say he is the author of the acclaimed story collection, The Miniature Wife, as well as the more recent novel, The Regional Office is Under Attack, winner of the American Academy of Arts and Letters Sue Kaufman Prize for First Fiction and the John Gardner Fiction Book Award. And did I say snappy dresser? He is a snappy dresser. And he's been published in McSweeney's. So, you know, he's down with the cool kids. Manuel, you down with the cool kids?
I kind of hate the cool kids. Oh, I'm sorry.
you've come to the right place. Oh, my God.
Yes. Welcome to the uncoolest kids on the internet. Manuel, not to pigeonhole him because he is an immensely talented author, but I like to think of him as a spookyologist. Especially with his book of collected short stories, The Miniature Wife. He definitely explores the realms between dreams and nightmares and just sort of how they leak their way into average everyday life, which is why we have selected him to discuss What a Nightmare, Charlie Brown, from 1978. Synopsis. A dog drinks a mug of nickels and a boy is harnessed and whipped. Synopsis. Manuel. Manuel, what is your experience with kind of the televised Charlie Brown-iverse? Were you an avid watcher of the specials growing up?
I was. I was an avid watcher the way that I'm a Catholic. I would go on Christmas and Easter, and that's the extent. Although I did remember watching one that was at a camp.
There's a couple of those, yeah.
Short Summer.
And then one that was where he misspelled the word beagle.
A Boy Named Charlie Brown.
I think, yeah. For a while, though, I conflated the two.
Because they both involve, like, getting on buses and so on, do they not? Like,
yes.
Yeah, they do. They do. And also, there might be another one. I'm really displaying my deep well of Charlie Brown knowledge. There might be another one where, is there a dog in this show? The dog runs into a lot of no dogs allowed signs. I think I saw that one as well.
Yes, you've seen the movies, it sounds like, because that's Snoopy Come Home.
You've really seen the greatest hits, I think, because and that one has a we came to find out in researching it for this podcast, the music was written by the Sherman Brothers when they were in the midst of kind of a fallout with Disney. So it's got like discount Mary Poppins music in it, which is just horrific.
Oh, yeah. I'm a greatest hits kind of guy. Like, I've got the Foo Fighters greatest hits right here. Also, Enya's greatest hits. I like greatest hits. It's where my wheelhouse is. I feel comfortable with, I mean, everybody else likes them. So I also like them.
Just kind of a survey of the classics. Yeah.
I feel like the episode we're discussing today is the opposite of a greatest hit. I feel like it is like a B-side, a cutout, a deep album cut, if you will. Manuel, with your sort of limited-ish knowledge of the televised specials, what are your initial thoughts on the 24 minutes that we made you enjoy?
Well, you know, so
quote unquote, yeah.
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts about this episode. My first one was that you guys stuck me with backup Charlie Brown for this episode. It's kind of like B-side Charlie Brown.
For the understudy, yeah.
He is totally the understudy, and I knew that immediately, which I surprised myself. I was like, that does not sound like the Charlie Brown I know. And I Wikipedia'd it, and lo and behold, it's some person who doesn't even have a Wikipedia link. in their name.
Some rando brand.
Some store brand.
Some rando.
Yeah. Well, I think my first question is, as I was watching this, is who wanted this? Because it's just 20 minutes of Snoopy, who is, you know, sort of a franchise favorite, beloved by merchandisers everywhere, just being basically tortured, just in agony for 20 minutes. Like, what niche, like, what itch does this scratch that they dedicated all this blandishment resource to it?
Yeah, and then not only is he abused and maligned and run over and barked at and nearly drowned, he also goes feral, which is one of the only things in the episode that I would actually earmark as nightmarish. Like, in a Cujo kind of way, to see America's favorite dog, like, bare his fangs, see his fur go up, go, for lack of a better word, the full alpha. It's completely mind-boggling. I will say that in The Art and Making of Peanuts Animation, which is a great book that covers, I think, most of the specials, it says here that What a Nightmare was one of Charles Schulz and Bill Melendez's favorite specials.
And really?
It was inspired- yeah, it's... Oh, there's... Here's the thing, Manuel. We learned that, like, for example, Snoopy Come Home was actually written and produced during the period that Schulz was getting divorced. And if you go back and watch it, you're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. This is a man who is falling apart. I cannot even begin to – I cannot even begin to identify what Homeboy's state of mind was for this. Manuel, as our resident spookyologist and nightmareologist – did you feel like this episode was appropriately nightmarish?
I gotta say, it was one of the, it was the most nightmarish of the Charlie Brown Peanuts episodes I've ever witnessed. I didn't even think that this kind of episode would have existed. What a nightmare. When you said, we're going to be watching this one, I was like, oh, I wonder, it's going to be like a funny kind of Halloween one, but it was not that at all.
No.
It was, pretty disturbing. I guess, like, if you go in for that psychological horror, that the kids are liking more and more these days, then it's a horribly frightening like upending of our understanding of this Snoopy paradigm. Where now what I wanted, though, it's a shame because it's just Charlie Brown and Snoopy the whole episode. I was really waiting for that moment where Woodstock would come in and face the dark nightmare that Snoopy had become.
Oh my God.
And there'd be that a reckoning. Like, there'd be like some kind of reckoning, and then you would understand that for the rest of the specials, our understanding of that relationship between Snoopy and Woodstock would be colored by this dark nightmare that Woodstock had borne witness to.
Now, are you suggesting that Woodstock would enter the dream in sort of an Inception-y kind of way? Or what was that Natalie Wood movie where people went into each other's dreams willy-nilly? Brain Spaz?
Devil Fetus.
I believe it was Brain Spaz. Natalie Wood's last film. Rest her soul. I love this idea. Well, we'll get to it. We should probably explain to our dear viewers who do not have to watch this unless they absolutely want to. I will say right away that the episode is beautifully blandish. Like, this is one of the nicest looking, nicest animated episodes we've seen in a while, especially in this sort of late 70s, early 80s. They were just all kind of terrible from then on. We start with like a gorgeous winter tableau. Young Charlie Brown, the only member of the Peanuts gang that we see in this episode, walks out with a sled and, ignoring like the laws of physics and all weight differentials, tries to get Snoopy to yoink him around. As I started watching it, I was like, oh, so far, so good. This is a Peanuts special, as I recognize Peanuts specials. And then they switched places. And that was when I began to feel kind of a sick feeling in my stomach. as Charlie Brown was harnessed and whipped and dragged his dog all around town. I feel like I've seen like a Tom of Finland drawing that depicts something not unlike this. What did you two think of the opening sequence? Molly?
Well, I definitely, well, cause your synopsis was pretty Spartan, but like that is the brunt of this episode is, Charlie Brown, like, lecturing Snoopy, like, did you know that dogs on the Iditarod don't have to, they don't sleep on top of a doghouse. They don't eat cheesecake or whatever he said, which seemed kind of like the dog equivalent of, you know, there are starving children in Korea. Like, why are you putting this expectation on your dog right now?
Dogs in the Arctic don't lead prima donna lives, is what Charlie Brown says to Snoopy. And I found myself thinking, well, why the fuck are you an expert, kid? And what do little boys do in the Arctic? I bet it's not, all fucking pizzas and egg milks, for you.
What was that?
So let's back up. So Snoopy is whips Charlie Brown's boy butt all around town. Charlie Brown is exhausted. Snoopy then excuses himself to the kitchen where he makes 82 pizzas and puts an egg in a blender and calls it, and then it magically becomes a milkshake. Manuel, I'm a simple man from the American Northeast. Is egg milk anything they have going on in the American South? Is this a delicacy that I did not know about? Molly, feel free to chime in.
Egg milk is not something I'd been familiar with before I saw this episode. One thing I do want to say, though, is that I really enjoyed in the writing in this moment where, much like Chekhov with his gun on the mantle, they show you that blender. And I was like, oh, fuck, I bet Snoopy's going to make himself a drink. And lo and behold, he did. It was not the drink I was hoping or expecting. And I don't know how it became what it became, but then he put two pizzas in that fucking oven and came out with 100 pizzas. So by that point, egg and milk becomes a delectable frothy drink.
Yes, my note there was the pizzas seem to have undergone mitosis.
I would also like to point out in this moment, in addition to this food bullshit that happens, because there is sort of a type of sequence in these specials, Manuel, that we refer to as Snoopy bullshit. That's the technical term.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also musical bullshit on top of this Snoopy bullshit. Like, it's just adding insult to injury because it knows it's going to throw us into the Iditarod for 18 minutes.
That song. That's the nightmare. Now, as we mentioned in the last episode with Maureen Gu, this is now the reign of Ed Bogus, occasionally aided and abetted by Judy Mueller,
his real name.
Yes, Ed Bogus, who took over for our beloved late Vince Guaraldi, who had his last hurrah with Arbor Day Charlie Brown. And as we mentioned last week, or last time, rather, he was an experimental musician in the 1960s and then forgot entirely about that. I would like to think that a big thing of egg milk just fell on his head or something, and he proceeded to poop out terrible cartoon soundtracks for what seemed to be the rest of his career, Peanuts and as well as Garfield and a million other things. But nothing I have encountered prepared me for the song Overly Civilized, Underly Dogified Dog, which let's hear a little bit of that right now.
I hope that you can digest all that food.
Civilized, underly dogified,
overly civilized, underly dogified,
underly dogified, overly civilized dog.
And there it was.
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. More and more, I feel like the Charlie Brown universe was not meant to have songs with the exception of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. This song was very, very bad and may very well have been the nightmare that we've been looking for, as promised by the title. But it ties into theme, and Charlie Brown's admonishment towards his pet as his pet eats 82 pizzas and egg milk and what looks to be like some variety of tropical boat drink, that his dog is overly civilized and underly dogified. Fam, I prefer my dog to be civilized. I don't know about you and your pets.
I understand that dog training is entirely about underdogifying your dog. It's about undercutting all their dog instincts so that they can live among civilized things.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that the goal of domesticating an animal?
It seems to be. And certainly, look, I get in my feelings when Banjo decides he wants to sit down, say, in the middle of a busy intersection instead of, say, walking out of danger. But I would rather have him be a little persnickety than, say, you know, peeing on things in the house and biting us. And I don't. What does Charlie Brown want? Manuel, what does Charlie Brown want from Snoopy?
Well, I have no idea because I'm like, dude, you're fucking enabling him. You always, like, you let him go into the kitchen and just make that stuff. Some you probably maybe taught him. I mean, I don't know very many dogs that know how to make pizza dough. So he had to learn it from somewhere. And it's, like, Charlie Brown is, he's as much the problem as Snoopy in this over-civilization of the dog. I mean...
Well, and I mean, he let Snoopy play on his baseball team, so he can't have it both ways.
Right, I know.
He's their star player.
Yeah, he's the only good player.
He cooked their Thanksgiving meal for them. He's on their baseball team. I think he can drive. Like, it's... You can't have... And I mean, Peppermint Patty frequently confuses him for a human. So maybe he's too civilized in that way, and Charlie Brown would prefer to have a dog that is more recognizable as a dog. But he can't have it both ways. What does Charlie Brown want? He doesn't make that clear.
No, his expectations are not clear at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I blame him. I blame Charlie Brown. It's pretty easy to, actually, because one is a human and the other, albeit sentient and possibly has opposable thumbs, which we should totally get into. The other is a dog. I will say, so Snoopy eats 45 pizzas and egg milk and whatever. And then I will say this in Snoopy's defense and against Charlie Brown. Snoopy is not so overly civilized and underly dogified that he does not sleep outside on his doghouse in a fucking snowstorm, Charlie Brown, you beast. Although I guess this, like my grandparents' dog mostly lived in their backyard. I don't know if y'all had pets growing up and what your experience was with them. I wonder if it's me just having a very suburban attitude towards pets. Manuel, did you all have pets growing up? And if so, were they where did they reside?
Yeah, we had a dog growing up from when I was in sixth grade, and she spent most of her time in the backyard. And this was in like Texas through summer, all the time. She was never outside until recently. My parents did not abide animals in the house, but now my mom talked my dad into getting a little dog that she has with her everywhere at all times now.
That's adorable. Yeah. As a kid, were you like, hey, maybe the dog should come inside? Or did you just sort of accept like, nope, that's where dogs go?
No, I was always lobbying and then also sneaking the dog inside. I remember one night I snuck the dog into my bed for nighttime, and that was a disaster because the dog didn't know what the fuck to do. Now it sounds weirdly sexual. Now it sounds weirdly sexual. I feel like I should backtrack. Mm-hmm. The dog didn't understand that sleep time was sleep time, and otherwise just wanted to play and just be a dog. Mm-hmm. I should have. I forgot to put the sleeping cap on her. That was my mistake. I was young though.
You live, you learn. So now Snoopy is outside in a very uncivilized snowstorm, falls asleep, and has that classic trope of entertainment, not just animation, the, oh no, I had too many pizzas dream. I have had dreams and nightmares in my lifetime, and I have certainly eaten far too much pizza and egg milk. But I don't know if I have ever had an indigestion dream. Molly, is this a thing that's ever happened to you?
No, see, and I don't remember my dreams, and I eat a lot of pizza, so maybe that's fortunate.
Yeah, same, same. Manuel, have you ever had a night where you were just like, oh, man, I love foods, and then
I love me some egg milks.
I love egg milks. And then you have the dream where you're chased around by the egg milks.
I have not had that. I've not had that.
Do you remember your dreams?
I do sometimes remember my dreams. Not very often. I like, though, how I feel like the writers knew that this was not a thing because they set it up with Charlie Brown saying, I hope you didn't eat so much you don't have crazy dreams.
Yes.
And then lo and behold.
And not only does he have a crazy dream, he has, and this is another thing I think we see in fiction a fair amount, or at least in bad fiction, is Snoopy has a dream outlining exactly the thing that was discussed right before he had pizzas and go to bed, which is to say, you know what they do in the Arctic? And then lo and behold, a dream about being in the Arctic. Manuel, if this isn't too writing 101 of a question for you, again, I feel like this is a realm that you sort of live in. This is your wheelhouse. Why do you think it is so difficult to recreate dream logic in any medium? It seems like a thing that people always choke on, and it's always like duper literal or ridiculously David Lynch-y or what have you.
Yeah, because there's a weird like understanding of our own dreams. Like we're in the dream and it's super compelling to us, but we don't have any real understanding of why. Like, because if somebody tells you their dream, it's really boring. It's just a shitty story and it makes no sense and it doesn't go anywhere. It's more of a long, dull anecdote. But when we're in it, it feels very compelling and really vital, right? And then you try and recreate that vitality or that compulsion of the moment. If you do it literally, it never comes across. And then if you try to make it just wackadoo, then it just seems like a pointless wackadoo exercise. I always tell students not to put dreams. There is a really good Kafka story that the theory is that it's a nightmare, but the part of it is it's weird as fuck and it never tells you that you're in a dream and it never lets you out of the dream. So the whole time you're just in this world, and only by how things get stranger and more violent and more unsettling do you finally realize, oh, we're in a nightmare and we are never getting out.
And which, do you know which story of Kafka's that is?
Yeah, I think it's The Country Doctor. Like there's one point where the country doctor is called to deliver a baby and he's like, hitch up the wagon. And there are these wild pigs pulling the wagon along. And then also there's some of the servants of the house. And it's just weird. Oh. It's just a weird fucking story. Maybe that is Kafka.
Yeah, it's like maybe they used it as source material.
That honestly
material.
Sounds not unlike the plot of this special. I wonder if there are any.
Yeah, everybody says that Call of the Wild is the source material, but no, maybe it is. Maybe it is the Kafka story.
It's interesting that you bring that up, Manuel, because as I was trying to make my way through this, two or three times, which is a real uphill battle, I found myself, and I had read on Wikipedia that Call of the Wild was one of the inspirations for this. I wonder if this was less terrifying for kids because I feel like Jack London was something that was like enforced reading as a kid for reasons that I cannot explain because they all seem to be about people freezing to death.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of wilderness survival story. Like there was Call of the Wild. There was Bridge to Terabithia. There was Island of the Blue Dolphins. Like Johnny Tremaine is about a kid with a disfigured hand. So like maybe this wasn't as much of a jolt for kids of this era because of what they had to read in school. But I don't know if anything justifies like, let's torture this beloved IP for 20 minutes.
Manuel, did you have to read a lot of wilderness bullshit, surviving in the wilderness bullshit growing up?
No, I didn't have to read. My dad wanted me to try reading them. Also, like Red Badge of Courage, I was bad at that too. But I was drawn to the movies because when I was younger, I harbored the desire to befriend a wolf. And that, I mean, doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
And then and also dress all in black with a black mask over my face and a sword like Snake Eyes from the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Did Snake Eyes have a wolf? I'm not G.I. Joe compliant.
Yeah, no, he had a wolf. I don't know if he always had a wolf, but there was one point where he acquired a wolf that saved his life because he saved the wolf's life. And then you could buy the new action figure that came with a wolf as well, which was the closest I got.
Yeah, now with wolf. Yeah. what did you imagine you and your wolf were going to do? Have adventures,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, have adventures and like eat pizza. After the adventures, we would eat pizza.
Pizza and egg milks. as we've sort of mentioned, Snoopy has too many pizzas and egg milks. He goes into a dream where he is part of an Iditarod-style dog sled team. I think this is the first time that we see other... Nope. I take it back. You're a good sport, Charlie Brown. We saw dogs in the abstract. But not like these dogs. Snoopy is basically... dead last on the pecking order or barking order of dogs. And he is maliciously traumatized for like a good 3.5 minutes. Molly, did you see that coming?
I mean, it is a nightmare. It is right in the title. The thing I didn't see coming was how little Charlie Brown there would be.
Kind of a dream, depending on your attitude towards Charlie Brown.
Well, because always the question with Snoopy, it's kind of that we talked about it, and I think our episode with our partners, perhaps. But the whole if Snoopy is no, it was the motocross episode where like if Goofy is a dog, then what is Pluto? Sort of that question, and so it was just all these things that are clearly dog shaped, and then there's a Snoopy shape. He kind of walks upright like Garfield does. And so that dissonance I did not see coming. And it brought up questions I did not expect to ask.
I had the note, Snoopy trying to fit in with the sled dogs is me trying to network in a room of other screenwriters. I'm so terrible at it. I think there is a good chance I may be overly civilized. I am just not into it at all. Manuel, when you saw Snoopy being horrifically abused, and I know you and I both enjoy what we like to call garbage, or at least I like to call it that, which is to say stupid movies, grindhouse-type things, horror movies. When you saw that this was going to be a lot of psychological and physical torture, was there part of you that was like, oh, okay, yeah, sweet. I did. I at least understand this.
Oh, yeah, no, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm in. What's going on? Yeah, it was interesting. The most recent time I watched it, I had my kids watch it with me just to see if they would have any specific reaction. And you know what? I was like, what'd you think? And they were like, that was a bit weird. But that was it. I was like, you're not traumatized. I mean, I guess if they were, they wouldn't tell me or even understand because they're children. But they sat through it as if it were just a normal thing on television.
That's really interesting. I wonder if that's because you, being the good parent that you are, have probably shown them a fair amount of weird stuff. What's the last garbage movie you and your kids enjoyed?
The last garbage movie that I made Sharon, my wife, and our daughter sit through was, and it's not garbage, but it's really fucking weird, was The Last Unicorn, which I don't know when the last time either of you revisited that gem from the 70s, but it is weird as fuck. It is a weird movie, and there's a tree with bosoms in it, and it kind of goes from there.
Huh.
Like bosoms that she squeezes a wizard into.
I haven't seen The Last Unicorn, so thanks for that Last Unicorn spoiler.
No. That comes about a quarter of the way through the movie. Oh,
okay.
Also, there are like these harpy hags around the same point who have big droopy breasts, boobies.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, this is strange for my 8-year-old daughter to be watching with me.
Is it Ralph Bakshi?
I don't know. I'm bad at names, people, and places.
He was the guy who did the garbage Lord of the Rings animated and Fritz the Cat and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 70.
Are,
I mean,
are boobs where boobs shouldn't be a part of that, his sort of aesthetic?
No, I mean, like the harpy is like traditionally is, you know, half like vulture, half woman, and has boobies. So they were where the boobies should be, I suppose, if you're going to be technical about your harpy. Boobage.
About your archetypes, yeah.
And now I am going to have nightmares tonight. So an interesting thing kind of pops up. We see Snoopy being horrifically abused. He's not getting any food. He is not drinking any water. He can't even curl up to the other doggies for warmth. Doesn't have a sleeping cap. But he does, resourceful and bethumbed dog that he is, builds a sleeping situation. He recreates his doghouse out of snow and ice. And falls asleep. And falls asleep. And this got me thinking, and I'd like to explore this for a moment. In this universe, in Snoopy's quote-unquote nightmare, he is treated as a dog. He has to do dog things. His life is terrible. And he is able to fall asleep and wake up, but still be in this awful, terrible Arctic world. Manuel and Molly, I pose to you, is the Peanuts universe as we know it some sort of kind of occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge situation where the reality is that Snoopy is a horrifically abused sled dog and has dreams of a world with round-headed kids and pizzas that magically multiply in an oven where there are no adults and no other humans or really animals?
Oh my God.
Is Snoopy's reality the Arctic? Molly, what do you think?
It's sort of the ending of Brazil is kind of what you've posed here. In going mad, he sets himself free. Well, I mean, it's... Well, because, oh, this is actually an excellent time to catch Manuel up on lump theory. Do we want to get into that?
Always. There's always room for lumps.
Okay. So, Manuel, to catch you up as quickly as possible, and you may have caught this from the episodes you've listened to, but in sort of our analysis of the Peanuts animated universe, there is always a problematic lack of authority figures. And the best explanation that we've come up with is... that there was some cataclysmic event in the town that turned all of the children into these giant-headed monstrosities and turned all the adults into these limbless sacks of meat who sort of a, like, I have no mouth, but I must scream kind of situation, which is why they all sound like and sort of a subsection to lump theory is that Lucy runs a matriarchal compound out of the most fancy house in the neighborhood. But... but that's to explain, like, why there's no adults and why Snoopy can walk as a man does and why he has all the costumes in town and that sort of thing. But what Josh poses is interesting because if it is all just – because there's all kinds of Snoopy bullshit. He surfs. He flies an airplane. He is in France. And if these are all dreams within this Iditarod nightmare, then what does that say for lump theory? Is that all in Snoopy's head as well?
Well, I did notice that the sled driver, of which I'm sure there is an actual name for that, but I'm just going to call him the sled driver.
Yeah.
The sledsman. He does also speak in, the trombone voice, but it is much deeper. It is the way that a dog may interpret the way that a human talks, which is why adults sound like that in the Peanuts world as we know it.
I'll tell you what, there was a Rugrats episode from the point of view of the dog, and they did a very similar thing where the only word he recognized was Spike, but he would get yelled at and they'd be like, that's Spike, and he would feel sad, that kind of thing. So maybe just the trombone sounds are because Snoopy doesn't understand when adults talk to him.
That bolsters your theory, Josh. My whole world is fucking turned upside down because now I have this new understanding that what I understood as Peanuts is actually just the deep interiority of, like, Snoopy, this Iditarod dog, long abused, short lived, and these are the dreams, these crazy dreams with these big-headed people, and he gets to make milk creams.
Gorges on
egg milks.
Egg milks, and he wins lights and display contests.
He can be the the masked Marvel.
That's true.
This is entirely. At first, I thought maybe we were going to explore that in falling asleep, that everything that happens after that moment is a different, deeper dream where he finally can take alpha status. But this is a far deeper, more compelling, complex theory than my dumbass theory.
Well,
there's
good
room for all our dumbass theories. That's the nature of this podcast.
Manuel, I am very proud of myself for having blown your mind. And now all I can say is, although I enjoyed it immensely, we are now even for the last third of regional offices under attack. Snoopy falls asleep and wakes up a lot in this dream, which I also was kind of using to bookend next sequence. So Snoopy is treated like garbage, garbage, garbage. He is whipped. He is beaten. He is starved. His water withheld. It's awful. And then he gets a good night's sleep. And then they make a left-hand turn at the Inukshuk, which that's how the internet told me I am supposed to pronounce it. And if I am wrong, please tell me. But which is a giant, beautiful, these are rock structures built by indigenous people in the Arctic as like a sign of like friendliness and also as place markers and directions. And again, very much part of the beautiful blandishment of this episode, but also makes a lot of sense that Schultz and his family went to the Arctic. And he drew that so we could say, like, oh, see, I was paying attention. They got rocks in the Arctic, I tell you. And then goes to, like, fucking Disney Arctic Frontier Town. And then we are rewarded with some good old-fashioned Snoopy bullshit. Snoopy goes into the Salty Something Saloon does a bunch of more typically Snoopy stuff. I'd like to imagine that the network watched the first cut of this special and was like, he's got to eat a sandwich or something. My man, he can't. I will also say that, this is the first evidence that we have of adult human beings in this universe, whether it is the dream universe or Snoopy's actual life. But we only see them, from the waist down, Tom and Jerry style. Molly, when we got back, when we're back on the, you know, the footing of like Snoopy doing bullshit, did you find yourself breathing a sigh of relief? Like, oh, thank God.
Well, here's the thing. As I was watching this whole special, I kept thinking to your spouse, Miss Kayla Kagan, who is Snoopy's number one fan, and just thinking like, well, what a slog this must be for Snoopy fans. And so it definitely felt like, oh, good, there's something for the Snoopards out there. Certainly. I didn't think that this was going to solve Snoopy's problems, but it wouldn't really be a Peanut special without. I do want to also, because you mentioned the network giving notes, what if, though, the entire special had originally been Snoopy just slogging it through the Iditarod, and the network was like, what if it was a dream, though?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a puzzler, to be sure. And like I said, I'm not even sure if now this Snoopy bullshit is yet another dream, because Snoopy keeps falling asleep and waking up within his own dream. So I don't know if, because he is now again doing vaguely human-y things like eating sandwiches, operating player pianos, playing cards, and doing the can-can stuff the three of us do in our everyday lives, that again, this is yet another disassociative moment where Snoopy's like, you know, it would be great if I was eating a sandwich that sounded like a theremin. The sandwich sounds like a theremin, by the way. Manuel, what did you think of this sequence? Did you feel like, okay, well, now I'm on even footing again. I'm watching Snoopy do bullshit.
Yeah, I was pretty happy for the Snoopy bullshit to return. And I was a little concerned with how he played cards. Because he and the dealer both didn't seem to understand how poker was played or how many cards should be dealt out. And then I was very concerned for him when he had a fifth ace, which I had to explain to my children why that was going to result in bad things happening. My biggest thing, though, was that I don't understand why Snoopy Bullshit didn't save him. I don't understand why he left. It seemed to go against everything that the character actually desired, which was comfort and adulation and reward.
Yeah. Once he had his mug of doubloons or nickels or Arctic monies.
Farthings.
Yes. Arthings. Farthics. Once he had a mug of gold whatevers, I don't understand why he wouldn't just be like, and now this is my life. I've got a mug of nickels or whatever. I seem to be, hey, Molly, you're a musician. Do player pianos need a player?
Well, he was operating the little foot pumps is what it is.
Okay.
You need
someone who can at least do that.
Yeah, though I don't know why you would tip the person operating the player piano. I guess for keeping in time? That would be a good gig. I would take that gig if I could have it.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I didn't know that there had to be any musical skill whatsoever with the player piano, but I guess that's the case. Yeah, so it's like, you've got your mug of nickels. Go do anything else. But of course, he can't resist the siren song of a little poker. And yes, I actually made the note, Nanwell. Poker scene is great, assuming 5-year-olds are familiar with the basic rules of poker. which you said you did have to explain to your kids. Did they grasp onto it, or are they like, why is that? To me, there's nothing more boring than televised poker, and this is no exception. Once your kids grasped it, were they like, oh, okay, I guess, or were they like, this is dumb?
You know, I gotta say, Snoopy, his facial expressions really sold that scene for me. So even though the televised poker itself wasn't super interesting, I think the kids really glommed on to like the tension that was building in Snoopy's own facial expressions.
Are either of you much of a gambler, card player, that sort of thing?
No, I know neither when to hold them nor when to fold them.
You've played cards with me, Josh, and you know the answer is no. I'm bad at cards.
Oh, God, yes. So, Molly, there was a period in my life, probably like the dawn of televised poker, where my friends and I had like a weekly, playing for quarters and beers sort of thing. So I guess, Manuel, you and I did play. I don't have any memory of that, which seems to belie the idea that maybe I enjoyed more beers than card playing. here's my thing about playing poker. If you are looking for more ways to have arguments with your friends, there's nothing better. there's no better way to do it. And something beyond the board games and tabletop games and RPGs that you enjoy, Molly, and that I occasionally enjoy, or that we all enjoy, because there is money involved. And there's just nothing better than when everybody is broke and literally breaking their piggy banks to come play cards and drink light beer, and somebody walks home with the proverbial sock full of nickels. How did you do the night that we played, Manuel? I cannot access that memory.
No, that's fine. There's nothing about me that should be accessible. I lost handily, quickly, and as everybody probably suspected when I walked into that room full of sharks.
Hello, sharks. I'd like to introduce to you today the idea of me giving you money.
But hey, I had a good time, and it was just like all of the money that we had that I was hoping to make so that we could pay rent that month, but whatever. I got some beer.
There you go. Turned out well for all of us. And it almost turned out well for Snoopy until he throws down a hand with 5 aces, which is at least 1 ace too many, if not more. But again, I feel like this is the fault of the dealer. Like, I don't know why, but I guess they don't come out. So a giant Donnybrook breaks out. And Roadhouse fan that I am, I'm always up for a good bar fight. And for me, there wasn't enough. But I guess they weren't targeting Snoopy. They were targeting just the general unfairness of playing a rigged poker game. Snoopy loses everything, walks through a door that says do not enter, and ends up on a stage that is very obviously designed for hoochie coochie dancers, which we do not get. And thank God, because I am still recovering from You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown, where Snoopy lies in a hospital bed and lasciviously reads Playdog magazine, which I showed Kayla a picture of that. And she was like, did you do that? I was like, no, I'm not. I don't have that. I know I have a lot of darkness in my soul, but not that much darkness. I thought, y'all, that when Snoopy kind of walked through that door and ended up on a stage, I was like, this is really the only thing that I identify as dream logic in this nightmare scenario. That's sort of like hazy, disconnected. You walk through a door and you're somewhere else. I can see why these two establishments would be attached, but it was just, it was a nice little nod to like, oh yeah, that actually scans. Molly, were you terrified that we were going to see Hoochie Coo dancers?
No, not really. I mean, no, actually, I didn't think there would be dancing, but I definitely thought he would meet some kind of madam, you know, some kind of barmaid. And then to have the intensely relatable, oh, I stumbled through a room in the dark and now I'm on stage is a dream I've definitely had. So this was a much more relatable sequence than I was prepared for.
Manuel, have you had this? Have you had this all-time greatest hit classic dream?
Yeah, I have, but I have to say that I was expecting there to somebody to throw like a tropical fruit hat onto Snoopy, and then he would like do some strange dance.
That'd be real dream logic. That'd be good.
I was a little disappointed that didn't happen, and then even more disappointed when he did kind of flash everybody his ass right before they threw like boots and stuff at him. So I think there was like they edged up to the cliff of Snoopy as a striptease dancer.
Yes.
And then backed away, thankfully. But I think they were there. They probably wanted to go there, and the network maybe pulled them back.
Old standards and practices. I did find it interesting that the audience was completely on board with him doing the old soft shoe. But once it was can-can time, they were like, yeah, absolutely not. And also, even though it's 1,000 degrees below zero outside, I'm giving up one of my boots to show my distaste for this. I would rather lose a foot entirely than watch this dog shake its ass. I'm intrigued by this by meeting a madam like that. Now that's the special that I kind of want to see. Like, who would be good for that? Like a good Dame Judi Dench or somebody like that. Like the wizened old sort of queen of the showgirls who teaches Snoopy like how to do. You know what? Kind of like Cher and Christina Aguilera in burlesque.
Oh, I was thinking more of Mae West type, but I like this much better.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes, of course. I guess that would be more current because they wouldn't have had the joy
Christina
of
Christina Aguilera hadn't been invented then.
Cher had though.
Yes, Cher sure had.
Yes.
She would have been great in this, by the way. Yeah, that's what I would have liked to see, some training sequences, like maybe Snoopy like learning the, like he's all. Oh, I've got, okay, now I've got the pitch for this. He's been on a chain, but now she's going to show him the ropes.
Nice.
and it's Snoopy learning all about sort of like the vaudeville circuit from Cher as Mae West in the wild Yukon.
The sequence I would have liked to have seen with a madam, because I've spent enough time on like dumb Gold Town kind of touristy things, but a thing that madams used to do is they would find creative ways to steal gold flakes from their clients. Like, oh, I've never seen a gold nugget before. Oh, let me just hold it. And then they would like hide gold flakes in their hair and then rinse them out into a cloth at the end of the evening. And so I would definitely want to see Snoopy like, hey, play your piano. Oh, let me see that gold nugget. Like figuring, like being trained by madams to steal gold from people. That's what I feel I was robbed of in all the Iditarod sequences.
I love this so much. And then, wait, are you suggesting that Snoopy and Madam Cher or whoever, they go from boomtown to boomtown being grifters?
Yeah, like one of them's misdirection and the other one like pinches pinches a nugget. That's not the phrase I want to use, but it's the only one that works.
By the way, that's the name of the movie. Pinching the nugget.
We're pinching nuggets, Charlie Brown.
With Cher and Snoopy. Music by Paul Williams, because it's the 70s, and that was the law. Manuel, anything to add to the scenario? Any cameos you would like to see in Pinchin' a Nugget?
No.
It's dream logic, man.
I'm
go for it.
I'm just really living in this whole wonderful movie that we're creating right here, live or recorded, however you're enjoying it. It's amazing. I kind of just want to live in it for longer. At first, I have to say, Molly, I was like, oh, that's really granular. You're like going into deep particular. This is going to be like an episode that's got to be
This is America, Charlie Brown once.
Forever.
Yeah, yeah. Like, vaguely educational.
And he's like flaking these nuggets. I'm like, God, that's going to be like, what a scene that would be. It's so many animators. But then the deeper you got into it, I was like, oh no, it has to be that way.
It's a montage. It's a gold theft.
Yeah, it has to be your vision. Your vision is so strong.
This is great. I almost don't want to go back to the episode, but luckily there's almost nothing left. Snoopy, as it turns out, people don't want to see a dog shake their ass. I don't understand it. My dog's ass is adorable. And although I don't get any, like, you know, any, like, sexual gratification for it, thank heavens, because then I got to go to a doctor or something.
No, we have platonic relationships with all of our pets. I feel like we need to establish this as a baseline.
Yes.
Standard disclaimer.
Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by having platonic relationships with your pets. Snoopy is booted from Madame Cher's house of Hoochie Coo and flaking the nuggets, and it's back to more Iditarod bullshit, where he is abused and abused and abused and abused, and then finally he's had all he can stand, and he can't stand no more. And then Snoopy, our most beloved American animated dog, an IP that is on fucking everything from pajamas to hats to omelet makers to what goddamn ever. It's an I'm going to say this. I don't particularly love this episode, but this sequence where you can practically hear each of his vertebrae crack as he goes from walking on two legs, reverting back to four legs. And he gets this look in his eyes and he bares his fangs and his hair goes up. And I found myself thinking, boy, I'm glad we got Manuel for this one, because it is fucking, it's not Cronenbergian, but it's close. It's really, it's deeply disturbing. Manuel, what did you think of this sequence?
I kind of loved it because finally.
Yeah, of course you fucking did.
Yeah, I did. I fucking loved it. I love how slowly he just tips forward. And at first, the first time I watched it, I was like, what's going on with Snoopy? And then I was like, oh shit, it's on. Snoopy, the beast is released. And it's just so slow and satisfying because it's so slow that finally he's on four legs. And then also he's still fucking like the smallest of all of the dogs. And I'm like, what are you going to do now, Snoopy? And that's before he does the four legs. They're the weird teeth that suddenly appear in his mouth.
Yeah.
That he flicks with his finger and tests the sharpness of. That was a really also unsettling moment for me, because those are not Snoopy's teeth. They're usually blunted and round and only in a big smile. But
Follow-up question. What did your kids think of this sequence?
Yeah.
They sat through it. They sat through it like it was just normal. And I was like, what is wrong with you guys? So, I mean, basically, I've resigned myself to the idea that we have raised sociopaths.
Congratulations. That's actually going to work out really well in this new iteration of America.
I know. I'm proud.
I also now want, not that this will ever be released on DVD, but I really want as box copy, just quote, dot, dot, dot. They sat through it, dot, dot, dot. Manuel Gonzalez, author of The Regional Office is Under Attack.
That's hilarious.
And then Snoopy goes feral, 100%.
Totally feral.
And barks and is mean and is terrible. And Molly, how did you take this in?
I mean, it kind of seemed like either he was going to die or this was going to happen. Like it. And I think the thing that messed me up was kind of, well, this is his dream. This is his dream scenario, he has just walked upright like a dog and like a man and won a poker game and so on. And I really did not know how to process it, if I can be honest. And I only watched it the once, so it's still kind of fresh in my head.
Oh, maybe you will now have to, don't eat any pizza before you go to bed tonight, Molly.
Okay, but what about my egg milks? Josh, I need my egg milks.
Oh, you of course have your, well, that's paleo. You got to have that. That's just how the cavemen ate, I guess. They also had egg milks.
No, I mean, I've certainly had the thought process. I think we all probably have the thought process of like, I wouldn't survive in olden times. What would my skill be? What would I do? And Snoopy's solution is just, I would just Hulk out. I would Hulk the fuck out and I would dominate everything around me eventually once my will is broken, you know, like.
Are we supposed to feel good about this?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like this episode was, obviously this episode was building towards this. And certainly during Madam Cher's parlor of Hoochie-Coo and Nichols, like I was like, oh, this is where we see Snoopy pull himself out of this and he's going to go have a better life. But no, it's just, it's back to the grind. And instead of like, it's Charlie Brown's dream come true. This is the thing that Charlie Brown wanted. He wanted his dog to be more dogified and less civilized, and we get it. But I found myself sitting there going, like, hooray?
Yeah.
I guess.
You show him? Question mark?
Charlie Brown gets what he wants, but at what cost? At what cost, people?
It's Cujo. I mean, basically, if this episode is supposed to have the ending that it's building towards, Snoopy wakes up from this dream and and suddenly D. Wallace Stone is rolling up a window in terror as Snoopy tries to bash its way through it. So we see Snoopy now becoming the alpha, inspiring, scores of pickup artists around the world, who believe in such a thing and such a designation. We see Snoopy, he's like at the front of the line and he's just killing it. And again, like, I guess, hooray. And then I'm sorry, guys. I get so mad. And then all the dogs drown. And then all the Manuel, how did your children react to all the dogs drowning?
You know, they sat through it because they still hadn't let go of the idea that it was just a dream. Like that was the one thing. Like the stakes were much lower for them. And I guess if I look at it, probably me, although I was more invested in suddenly the dogs drowning. But I was also invested in, like, why are they taking that sled over those craggy rocks to begin with earlier in the episode? And then now why are they going over
like,
these
sure,
ice flows?
Sure, I'm
going
to shave off 5 minutes, yeah, but like, it's through a frozen lake. Well, okay.
Take a left here.
Manuel, I don't know if I've ever told you this theory, but everybody talks about when and how robots are going to kill us. And I'm sure it's something you've thought about as well. In fact, I'm certain it's something you've thought about before. But my theory is that it starts with Waze, and this is a very driving in Los Angeles thing.
Yeah, yes,
but often. Waze often insists on taking a left-hand turn into a four-way intersection without any stop signs in four lanes of Los Angeles traffic. And every time that happens, I find myself thinking, this is how they're going to clean us out. They're going to start with Los Angeles. They are going to drive us into unwinnable, unnegotiable Kobayashi Maru style traffic situations. And then it's piles of bodies from there.
I thought that Waze actually addressed that and then said that they were not going to make, it was never going to make you do an unprotected left-hand turn anymore.
There is a switch. I believe it is an option within the UI that you can do, which again,
oh my God,
which is perfect because literally no, except for like dorks like me, I don't want to cast dork aspersions on the rest of us. Oh, a little dorky, who like to kind of get in there and fiddle with our settings just so. I think nobody touches it. And if they do, I suspect that's like, I think the comedian Jake Johansson had a bit about the about the darkness level on your toaster that is attached to nothing and does nothing, or like the door or like the door closing thing on an elevator. Like, oh, that's just there. That's a fidget spinner. That's just there to make you feel like you're doing something. No, Waze is going to kill us all. And it successfully killed Snoopy and all of his dream dogs. and we are back to quote unquote reality.
Yeah. Did either of you think that maybe Snoopy was going to continue his Hulk out and yank everybody out
That's
of the water?
That's what I hoped. Yeah.
Was there a moment where you
that
thought
just seemed like what they were building to?
Yeah.
Right.
They're undermining they're subverting expectations at nearly every turn in this episode, guys.
Though this was the part of Iditarod dog life that Charlie Brown conveniently left out, is that the human could just steer you into cold water where you would freeze and or drown in some order.
Do you know what dogs do in the Arctic, Snoopy? Well, I'll tell you. They drown.
You need to be more like them.
They die a horrible, watery death. Oh, God. Now, speaking of subverting expectations, before we go into the last, 30 seconds of the episode, because it's all over but the shouting, did either of you think... Well, I don't want to couch it at all. Manuel, how did you think the rest of this episode was going to play out?
I thought that Snoopy was going to be a badass and kind of show Charlie Brown what he learned in his nightmare. And then, just come right up to the edge of, slashing Charlie Brown's throat. But, in a Peanuts style. If Charles Schulz imagined it, how it would be kind of sweet and cute with some piano behind it and maybe Woodstock floating above. But I expected...
As Charlie Brown bleeds out? You've been slashed in the jugular, coma, Charlie Brown?
Or dunked in cold water?
Your end is nigh, Charlie Brown.
Oh, God, I want every episode we've come up with during this session so bad, except the one we actually had to watch.
I didn't think he was going to still be soft, though. Look at me casting aspersions on Snoopy.
He's underly dogified.
Yeah, Molly, what did you think? How did you think it was going to wrap?
I kind of hoped for, this is maybe too much to ask of a Charlie Brown animated special made for network TV and meant to be only seen once, but I was hoping for some Inception style sort of cliffhanger at the end. Like he presents Charlie Brown with a mug full of nickels or something. What I certainly didn't expect and what we got instead was a 60 second long charade sequence where he described everything that we had just seen confusingly and awkwardly.
Yeah, that was definitely the way that scene would have ended were I Charlie Brown is it with me talking kind of in hushed tones on the phone. Yeah, it's the seizures again. I don't know. I'm going to have to bring him in tomorrow if he makes it through the night.
I really didn't get that pantomime.
He's got St. Vitus's mime. We shouldn't laugh. It's what killed Marcel Marceau. It's so terrible.
Too soon, Josh. Too soon.
I apologize. I will now sit in a box that nobody can see. Snoopy learns nothing. I would like to repeat that again. Because I feel like this is a very rare thing in children's television. And even in Charlie Brown specials, which are sort of weird amoral universes where bad behavior is neither rewarded, but nor is it scorned. And people just sort of continue walking the same concentric circles infinitely, never getting any better or worse. Snoopy makes himself a big old motherfucking ice cream sundae. With chocolate sauce on it. And I bring that up because in the wiki, the one thing that they chose to say, this is an incongruity, was that, dogs can't have chocolate. It's that's the one incongruity you found in this, huh? That's where you drew the line. He makes
egg milk's totally fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Most 5 out of 7 veterinarians recommend at least 1 egg milk a day, with a
chair. 4 pizzas if you can swing it. Yeah.
4 pizzas if you can swing it. His marinara levels are very low. Josh and Kayla, you need to make sure to get him at least a can of ragu a day. He makes an ice cream sundae. And for a split second, I found myself thinking, and I don't know if you two thought this as well, he's going to give it to Charlie Brown. He's going to be so thankful that he doesn't have to sleep outside and he's not drowning in icy cold water or any of that. And he doesn't have to pull a sled or play poker or any of those things, he's going to make an ice cream sundae. He's going to give it to Charlie Brown, and he's going to be grateful for what he has. No! That doesn't happen at all. While that stupid goddamn song claimed, under the dog, he makes an ice cream sundae. He eats it. He doesn't even learn. I'm going to back up from the mic. He doesn't even learn that you shouldn't eat before you go to bed. I'm really mad about this, y'all. And then he puts on a sleeping cap and he goes to bed, and that's the end of the special. Manuel, you've already spoken a little about how you would like this special to end, with Charlie Brown's jugular being slashed as on a nice sunny day as Woodstock floats around. Molly, if you could rewrite the end of this episode, what would you give it? What favors would you do for this?
I don't know. I wish that he could like figure out maybe how to be slightly more dogified, like Manuel said. Like if he could somehow carry that into the real world. What I'm hung up on right now is the whole "this is the Peanuts universe as we know it is Snoopy's dream" thing, because. Going on that, we just saw Snoopy die. So where are we now?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
These are the last flashes of his brain as he sinks into the icy cold water.
Or maybe it's the afterlife.
Oh.
Oh, God. Yeah, a true Owl Creek Bridge scenario. Because it does end with him falling asleep and fading to black. I feel sick. Oh, I don't.
No, the other thing I do also want to bring us back around to the fact that this was Sparky and Bill's favorite, you said, Josh? This was their favorite?
Among their favorite episodes. But I honestly think it must have been because Sparky got the tax write-off to take his family to the Arctic. And he was like, look, I put it in a thing. And now, ha-ha. That's
hey, he's playing poker. Get it? Dog's playing poker.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
I didn't think of that either.
Well, then technically, he should have been holding that fifth ace in his lower paw.
He hadn't learned how to use that paw before.
That's true. We've all learned a lot. Manuel, what did you learn? What did you learn?
Oh, God, I learned that I missed out on some really weird garbage Peanuts specials.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, no, it was quite an experience. I was a little bummed that not only after all of that, then like Charlie Brown just kind of just let him crawl into bed, and again it comes back to like you are enabling him, Charlie. Like,
yeah,
this is your responsibility. He only learns from you.
What's the lesson here, fam? Is there any lesson? What's the moral of this story?
Don't eat 12 pizzas and an egg milk before you go to bed.
And then if you do, don't go to bed on top of a frozen doghouse.
But if you do, then get inside and eat an ice cream sundae and then sleep in a people bed while wearing a sleeping cap.
Get your blood flowing with some charades.
That charades scene. I was like, I've just watched this whole thing happen in real time, and I still don't know that I understand every maneuver that you're making in this mime sequence, Snoopy.
Do you think that Charlie Brown understood, or do you think he was just like, okay, well, dog's acting up again, get inside?
That's, yeah, he'd have to.
Hello, doctor. I shouldn't put a wallet in his mouth. That's an old wives' tale. Okay, my mistake. Is there anything? Should I keep him warm? Should I keep him bundled? Okay, I'll try.
Ice cream sundae, got it. Cool.
Ice cream sundae. Chocolate sauce is okay. Oh, I didn't realize.
He doesn't have much time left. Okay, well then, yes, he does. He has always wanted to try chocolate. Oh no. Oh no. That's why he dies in this. Oh God, I don't feel well. I don't feel well, guys. Well, we did it. I'm not going to sleep tonight and may never sleep again. And this is exactly what I wanted from this episode. Manuel, thank you so much. Is there anything you would like to plug anywhere you would like to send people on the great internets?
No, I don't have anything to plug, but I did want to say that I didn't get to air my my displeasure with this whole like Peanuts thing and the lack of like representation of the Mexican people, because like there was It's Time for a Siesta, Charlie Brown, but nobody remembers that episode. And then It's a Mexican Standoff, Charlie Brown, was never aired. And I've been pretty pissed about that. I mean, Franklin gets his day, but you know, where are my people?
So then cathartic to watch Snoopy dunked in a in a icy pool.
Yeah. Like, this made me feel like a little bit like, okay, there's a little bit of something for me to hold on to.
There is actually, Manuel, there you will be happy to know. You know what? Happy is a real there was a I don't think he was ever featured in any of the specials or movies, but in the strip there is a character named Jose Peterson who plays on Peppermint Patty's baseball team.
Oh.
And he's a very good baseball player.
He's probably from the Dominican Republic, I bet. That's where all those good Latin baseball players come from. Don't at me. I'm not even on Twitter, people.
And I'm locking my account. we will, of course, have links to Manuel's delightful novels, as well as other places on the internet that you can find his work. And I can't recommend Regional Offices Under Attack enough. It posits the theory that maybe teenagers should not be recruited to be international super spies. And you will see my rebuttal to that on Disney Channel original movie Kim Possible, summer 2019.
Gauntlet thrown.
kind of the yin and yang of recruiting teenagers. Points,
counterpoint.
Yes, to take down. I theorize that maybe it's not so bad. Molly, anything that you would like to plug or any final thoughts?
No, I just want to plug this podcast, which you're already listening to. So good job.
I'm Josh Kagan.
And I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Manuel Gonzalez. Thanks, guys, for having me on here.
It was an utter delight. This has been Peanuts Gallery, and thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review on iTunes, tweeting about us at Peanuts Podcast, or telling a friend. Thanks to Lard D'Souza for the graphics, Ken Plume for the blandishment, Waffle Media for the nickels, and Sparky, Bill, and Lee for everything else. If you'd like to buy an official Peanuts Gallery meat lump plush, you can't because they don't exist. But you can turn a dirty sock inside out and put googly eyes on it, and you're basically there.